All right, hi everybody, and welcome to Lecture 7 in this Ancient History program of History at Our House. Hope you had a good long weekend, the first of a few along the way in our academic year, where we can enjoy a little extra break. And now we gotta put our minds back into gear and work as much as we can here to establish the right context of thinking, of the context of knowledge for studying ancient history. And the most important thing that we're going to do this year is work to connect our understanding of the world we live in to the ancient world. Seek out the connection between us and the ancient world. And we've started to highlight that connection by means of what I call anchor facts. And we're going to complete our initial set of anchor facts today. And we're going to make certain here to focus on the significance of these facts rather than, of course, we need to know them and we need to be able to summon them at will. So there's an element of memorization involved in these facts. But the most crucial thing of all is going to be our ability to think about them and to understand what they do for us, what it is that knowing such facts is good for, right? Because if we can see that, then we can summon the motivation that's needed in order to really be interested in and get the maximum value out of ancient history. Because if we can see that, and we'll see, for instance, today, some people who were extremely interested in ancient history, we can actually come around to the view that there's nothing more important than ancient history, actually. It's the most important part of history of all. So that's a tricky thing, because nowadays, remember, like I said before, nowadays the most common kind of perspective concerning ancient history is, well, it's ancient history. It's useless. How can you use ancient history to choose between Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders? Does that have anything to do with it? Right? I mean, The ancient Greeks didn't have universal health care. They weren't worried about the environment. What do they have to tell us about the world? Right? Is that really, you know, the most important thing? I mean, nowadays, the general consensus is that all that ancient stuff is dispensable. And our modern issues kind of separate us in some way, and we are no longer connected to that ancient past. I think that's a terrible, terrible error. Nice to see you, Rosie. Studying ancient history, the main goal of anybody that wants to teach ancient history has to be really to reconnect with it, to help us not fall into that trap of ignoring it and seeing it as irrelevant. So today, we're going to emphasize the main connection and work to understand and for ourselves, be able to articulate that connection. And, once that connection is established, it's going to be like our main connection to the past, and then the others will be easier to make. We'll be able to kind of, you know, work on the details. We'll be able to work on other types of connections that we're going to see using what we call anchor facts, more of them, and so on. But to do that really well, we have to have a strong connection in place from the start, and the anchor facts are going to give us that strong connection from the start. So let me go ahead and bring up that handout from last time. I haven't printed it off and given it to you guys yet because it's still incomplete in terms of these initial set of anchor facts. And we're going to add now another one. Okay? And I'll show you the painting first. The painting is very beautiful that I use to symbolize the fact, the anchor fact in question. So this is not a narrative painting, though we wouldn't be able to do it in history through art. But it is a painting of ancient Athens, and you might recognize it. Today, this is in ruins, but it's in, you know, good enough shape that it's still, and it's being restored continually to the point where hopefully one day it'll almost look like this again. And so this is the Acropolis in Athens. You can go to this site, you can visit it, and you can see quite a bit still of the features that are shown here, even though they are in ruins. You can't see the statue of Athena there, which would be a colossal statue. I don't know if it ever stood quite in that way. This is quite imaginative, but still elements of this are very close to the truth. And so it's a symbol of ancient Athens. And so we're going to see, what is the connection between us and ancient Athens? And again, how is ancient Athens some kind of anchor fact? All right, so here we are, right, in this modern time. We live in the world that we live in, that is a world in which the United States is the most important country. And that helps us situate ourselves and understand better where we are. But as we're going to see, this is a really crucial bridge to ancient times. And it's going to be a fact that we need desperately in order to see that our world is not separate from the ancient world. That in fact, we live in the same world, in essence. That our history, things that happen in our society in this very moment, reflect the fact that we have learned certain lessons, and perhaps not others, from the ancients. And our learning and the things that we've gotten right have made our society better. And the ones that we haven't learned properly, unfortunately, are hindering us in our progress. And we're not doing as well in those areas. And so we are really, really closely connected, even though it seems to be really, really far away. So to bring our painting up and to bring in our final anchor fact that connects us to the ancient past, here it is. Okay, there's our symbolic painting. And our anchor fact is, in fact, two facts. So you could call it like a tandem fact, might be another way of putting it. I wonder if I can make this bigger to make it more more visible to everybody here. There we go. That would be more satisfying, right? So this is our next anchor fact that connects us to ancient history. And it's, in brief, it is the fact that in the ancient world, two different ancient societies created forms of government for the first time ever. Okay? And these forms of government have been incredibly influential in shaping history. In fact, we're living in a kind of society that could not exist were it not for this. Okay, that's the connection. That's the connection that we're seeking. Okay, we're living in a modern world that could not exist were it not for these ancient innovations. The innovations are called Athenian democracy and Roman Republic. The Athenian democracy was created in 508 BC, and the Roman Republic was created in 509 BC. As far as we can tell, because what do we have in front of these dates, which tells us, well, we got to give it a little bit of wiggle room here, right, Juliet?
We've got the small C, which stands for circa.
Yeah, okay. Okay. Now, accepting that it's pretty accurate, and there's kind of a fun story actually concerning this, but it's only fun if you know history. So which one came first? The Athenian democracy of 508 or the Roman Republic of 509? Theo is back. Tell me, Theo.
Well, it says the Roman Republic, but historians think that they just wrote the history so that they came first.
Oh, okay. So you know some of that background story. Okay. Right. But we're going to accept the date because we're not going to get into the who came first kind of debate. And whether or not the Romans are fudging their dates, okay? So you are right about the story. But technically, right, I mean, the point here, of course, is that 509 comes before 508. It's interesting that they're so close together, right? And these are two competing innovations in a sense. And so it's kind of curious and interesting that they're so closely matched and that one comes right before the other. Very unusual, and not necessarily completely 100% true. That's why we have the circas. But anyway, we're going to run with it because whether or not, one thing may have happened in 507 and one happened in 510 or whatever, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. We're going to go with the dates that we have. They're the best that we have, probably the best we'll ever have with regard to these stories. So we're just going to run with it. Okay, so before we go into forging this connection here, we need to make sure that we have our terms of reference for understanding the facts themselves. So when I put down that the Athenians created democracy and the Romans created a republic, that's got to be meaningful to everybody here. So we've got to make sure that we have basically these terms hammered down and we know what they mean. We don't have to be absolute total experts in these terms, but we have to have the essence of the meaning of each of these terms. So let's start with the easier one, democracy. Okay, if we're going to say that there's, today people talk all the time about democracy, right? And so we're going to have a democratic election. Relatively democratic. There's some interesting things about the American system, for instance, that are not democratic. We're going to have a democratic election, to choose the president next year. So, okay, what does that mean? What is a democracy? Rosie, get us started.
A democracy means you have something, but a democracy means that every person has the same rights. Sort of. So
No, stop. I'm going to stop you there because that's not true. So we got to be careful about that one. The term rights is a very important term, but it is not one that we can use in conjunction with the term democracy. So we have to be very careful about that one, Rosie. Okay? We're not going to say that it has to do with rights. It's something else. Abby, go ahead.
Majority rules.
Okay, now you went straight to the heart of the matter. So we're gonna have to work our way there slowly. Okay, so the term democracy has a specific meaning and only one meaning. Okay, and Abby has just stated it. So if you're not familiar with that one, then you've got to write it down and then, circle it and highlight it and think about it. The meaning of the word democracy is the majority rules. Okay? Now, we've got to work our way there because the majority rules in a particular way. Okay? So let's work our way to the term democracy by starting with another kind of rule. And it's called monarchy. Okay? Menes Narmer was a monarch. What is monarchy? Theo, go ahead.
Well, it's the rule of one.
The rule of one, right? Mon, like monologue is one person speaking. Monotone means that you're speaking in the same tone, right? Okay, so monarchy means one person rules. Menes Narmer became the single ruler of Egypt. That's a monarchy. Okay, and then democracy, the majority rules, but it rules by a particular, how does that work? Okay, so now, in fact, the term democracy, It's a useful thing to summon. Comes from Greek, from the Greek words. Demos, the people. And kratia, which means to rule. Okay, so in fact, I was hoping that somebody would actually get us started in our discussion of the term democracy by saying the people rule, because that's the beginning of the concept. And that is kind of a vague notion that a lot of people carry with them, the idea that there's kind of a generalized distribution of power. Rosie, I think that's kind of what you might have been trying to say, that in the sense that people have equal rights. They can all equally participate in government. Okay? And so you might qualify that as a kind of right. It's certainly not the kind that Thomas Jefferson was talking about, though, when he talked about rights. So we got to be careful of that word, rights. In democracy, the people rule. That's literally what the word means. But what happens is, there's a mechanism there, right? Because what do we associate with democracy? How do they do it? How do you get the entire populace? All right, of course, we're talking about adults of a certain age. In ancient Athens, it would have been only the men. Nowadays, we're more enlightened, so we have the men and the women together. Okay, but not the children. All right, so it's not entirely the people, but it is, anyway, people who are in a reasonable position to act. Okay, what do they do? How do they rule the people? It's pretty straightforward. See if you can say it in one word, Nemo. Go ahead. Wait, go ahead.
Vote.
Perfect. He actually did it in one word. Right. The people vote. Right. So that's what we're talking about. There are democratic elements in the American government, for instance. So people vote in terms of positioning certain people in certain offices, including the executive power of the government, which is in the presidency. Okay, so they vote. All right, but in a democracy, now when people vote for the president in America, that's not really a democracy. But people think of it that way when they're not being entirely clear in their use of concepts, because democracy means the people rule. And that means that whenever there's an issue in the society, in terms of determining the laws of the society, the people vote. Okay? And that's what determines the laws. That's what determines how the society is going to function. The people vote. Okay? And then, now, once again, in terms of a single word, because Nemo knocked that one out of the park before. Okay. Who, when you have the vote, that was our previous single word. Who wins? Who gets to do the ruling? Because you got, when people vote, they don't always agree, right? So in the end, you're going to have one group who will have its way and another group whose preference will be overturned. So what word do we need here in order to capture this notion that in a democracy, the people doesn't really rule? That's kind of the sloppy starting point. We need a more careful statement of what actually happens. Juliet, what's that single word?
Majority.
Majority. Right, exactly. So that's what Abby got us to, in a single leap. So that was really impressive. Okay, that's the essence of it, right? The majority rules. And what we'll see is that it's very important to understand this definition and to understand in what ways, for instance, very profound and very important and significant ways that impact your rights as a human being, that the United States is not a democracy. And if it was, just how deeply dangerous that would be to you. And in what ways democracy is, there are democratic parts of the American government and how dangerous those are. And the founding fathers, as we're going to see here, the Declaration of Independence and later efforts, were designed to make sure that the United States would not be a democracy. Because the founders understood ancient history. They looked at Athens. They saw all the good stuff, and there was good stuff. But ultimately, they judged that to be a lesser form of government. They saw that there was another kind that was better. And they went with that. Okay, so democracy is the majority rules. We'll see in ancient times and in modern times where that, what the dangers are of that type of system. And that will help to clarify, hopefully for you, why the United States is not a democracy. And yet, in many ways, is democratic, so that's kind of a tricky thing. You're going to be able to navigate through this, these notions to be able to get a clear picture of where America is today. Because when America was born, it was a different kind of government. Which is why we have a tandem fact over here. Okay? In other words, a two-part fact. And it's just amazing that they happened in such close proximity, both geographically and in time. It's really amazing. So right around the time when the Greeks were making their democracy, the Athenians in particular, people of another city-state, in Italy as it turns out, Rome of course, were making another kind of government, and they called that a republic. Okay, now this is also a difficult word. It's quite a difficult word. People don't get this one right either. We've got to have a good, essentialized definition of that, too. So, does anybody want to wade into that challenge? Because democracy was pretty tough. We got there, and Abby had her essentialized definition to help us, to catapult us forward here. But what about republic? And what is it that makes the United States a republic? Or at least, mostly a republic still. What is a republic? Theo, get us started.
I think a republic is a government made to protect the rights of its citizens.
Okay. There, now we have that key word, and we're going to have to use it absolutely, yes. A government that protects the rights of its citizens. And there's a very specific way that it does that. Okay, so we're going to need, and it's connected to democracy. So we're going to have to think about what that way is in order to have a good definition. Okay, so if you have a democracy, then the people can vote. And they can do anything. Whatever they vote happens. And I will prove that to you through ancient history. And for instance, if the people decide there's somebody that's really annoying, they can have a vote and kill that person. The majority will decide and they will say, we want to kill that person. And they will kill that person, even if he's not a criminal. Okay, so this is the danger. The majority rules, because monarchs can do that, right? If the monarch says, oh, that guy over there, I don't like him, off with his head. That's what happens in monarchies, right? Tyrannical monarchs will just, whatever they say goes. It's just awful, right? One human being can dispose of everybody else. Okay, but in a majority rule situation, that can happen as well. There's one particularly infamous case in ancient Greek history. There are other infamous cases in American history, in German history, in other cases where democracy really comes through, and it's really, really clear case of what it means for the majority to rule and how. There's something in a republic that stops the majority from ruling. What is it? What is in place in a republic that's not in place in a democracy that stops the majority from ruling? Kenny?
I think that because there are representatives for different areas of people, that's how it's different.
That's part of it. That is part of it. The idea of representation is a feature of it. But that by itself is not what makes it a republic. Okay, so that's definitely something that the founders were thinking of, but it's not the answer. There's something else. Keen?
Rights.
Yes, but rights have to be enshrined somehow. Where are they? How are they protected?
I
There's something that stops people from ruling each other. So what is that thing, Abby?
A constitution.
You can only change
something in the constitution by a supermajority.
Okay. That's the mechanism for constitutional change, okay? But the mechanism for protecting rights in a republic is called a constitution. Okay. That is a set of laws that can't be changed by the majority. Okay, a set of laws that lay out what the government can and cannot do. Okay, especially in the best example in all of history, the American system of government, the Constitution said, here are the different things that the government can do. And then what was the very first thing that was added to the Constitution that says, here are all the things the government cannot do, ever? What was that called? Review of American history here. There were 10 of them. Juliet?
The Bill of Rights?
Mm-hmm. The amendments to the Constitution. Okay, that said, Congress shall make no law with regard to these variety of things. Okay, so that's the protection. Okay, so basically it says, you go ahead and vote your heart out. Doesn't matter. You're not doing this. Okay? These are rights. You can't take these away by voting. So that's the Constitution. That's the mechanism for protecting rights. Of course, how well a republic functions depends on how good that Constitution is and how good that Bill of Rights is. And the American Bill of Rights is really good. It's the best ever. It's imperfect, but it's the best ever. And a great deal of what happens in a republic, whether it's the American Republic or the Roman Republic, revolves around how good that set of laws is. Because the people then have to live within those boundaries. Right? And they live within those boundaries, and then they have to decide whether or not they like those, and if they're going to make any changes, how do they do it? And if they can't make changes, what are they going to do about that? And it's definitely what determines the shape of the history of a republic is the nature of those laws. All right, good. So that's kind of a necessary thing that we have to have in place here in terms of going ahead with ancient history. What we need to appreciate is that America's founding fathers, show you the classic, quote from American history. Hopefully you guys recognize this guy, Benjamin Franklin. Right? And when he was leaving the Constitutional Convention, where the founding fathers made the laws of the United States, the fundamental laws of the United States, a lady stopped him and said, what kind of government do we have? And his answer is the best answer ever. A republic, if you can keep it. It's a brilliant answer. In other words, what he was saying was, this is the best form of government possible. It's also the most difficult form of government to honor. So that's the if you can keep it part. Because you got to understand what it's all about. And if you don't understand what it's all about, you won't be able to do that last part. You won't be able to keep it. It's not easy to do. Because, I just said, a constitution is what protects rights. But what is a constitution? You can go read it. You can go see it. In Washington, D.C., what is the Constitution? This question is way too easy. Nobody wants to answer it. It's a piece of paper. What? How can a piece of paper protect your rights? It can only do so if the society maintains its allegiance to the idea. of a constitution. The further a society distances itself from that value, and we're pretty far from it now, the less well the constitution functions. So it's a piece of paper, and it's an amazing thing. And when you live in a republic, you live in a society of laws, which is amazing. It is the best situation possible for human beings. But, oh my goodness. Hello, hello? Anybody still here?
I can hear you.
Oh my gosh. Wow. That was about the worst internet loss, internet connection I've ever had. That's not quite true, but it's so rare that I lose total service and I can't connect. Nothing works. Wow. All right. Well, now we gotta mount our recovery here from that terrible interruption. I apologize. I wish stuff like that didn't have to happen. But, oh man, now I gotta get my footing here and get back into any type of, alright, let me just, I'm gonna take one big breath and then, I'm gonna start up again. Alright, hi everybody, for those of you on the recordings, this is gonna be kind of an obvious break that occurs here. I was disconnected from the internet for a good 5-10 minutes. So, luckily I was able to get back here and everybody was waiting for me. So we are going to resume here and I'll try to complete this segment of the class today, from this point forward. So let me go back. I believe I was sharing my screen with you guys. Abby, I'm going to become the presenter again. Okay. So, let's get back to where we were, I thought I had good old Benjamin Franklin up here with "A Republic If You Can Keep It," and we were just completing a discussion of the nature of democracy and republic, okay, and the fact that the United States is created as a republic. Assume my audio is functioning here. I hope. So here's Benjamin Franklin, "A Republic If You Can Keep It," is his famous quote for what type of government the American form of government is, when he was asked after leaving the Constitutional Convention. And Benjamin Franklin is featured here, for instance. There he is, along with Thomas Jefferson, the main author of the Declaration of Independence, and some others here in this room, all of them founding fathers, and particularly important one, John Adams, who's also pictured here. It's John Adams who is going to help us today, although pretty much all the founders can do it. I'm going to use John Adams today to help us understand the importance of ancient history. This is a really interesting article I found online from the Greek American Review. And it has a kind of big sounding title, "American Philhellenism," which is just a word for the American connection to ancient Greece. Okay, the American connection to ancient Greece. In this paper by a Greek author, he talks about the connection between America and ancient Greece. And in particular, right here, let me get my annotations out just to make sure everything is visible. Okay, he starts into a quote from John Adams, right? Writing in 1765, the Bostonian, John Adams advised dot, dot, dot. Okay, this is the bottom of the quote. We're going to move back up to the top. Look what he says. This is the second president of the United States, one of the most important founding fathers, definitely. Up in the top five with Thomas Jefferson. "Let us study the history of the ancient ages. Contemplate the great examples of Greece and Rome." Okay? And there's a little bit of a confusing usage here, which I'm sure will be of interest to you, and you can ask me about it if you want. I'll just continue reading. "For Adams, the republics of Greece and Rome were the seats of liberty. And a letter to Lafayette, who was a French general who helped the Americans, he adds, 'Two Republican powers, Athens and Rome, have done more honor to our species, humanity, than all the rest of it.' A new country can be planted only by such government." Okay, this is John Adams, second president of the United States. And this is his assessment of the significance of ancient history, but more specifically, Athens and Rome. So, how important were Athens and Rome to John Adams, to Thomas Jefferson, and the Founding Fathers? How important? What does it say right there? Athens and Rome have done more honor to our species than all the rest of it. How important? Oh, we got the noise of the hand raising again. Abby, go ahead.
Really, really, really extremely important.
Well, in fact, there's nothing more important, is basically what he's saying here, right? In other words, what he's saying is, if I had to pick the top two things to study in all of history, and I agree with him. Well, with one exception now, see. But basically, I would agree with him at the time. He would say, if you want to get something out of history, if you want powerful knowledge, what you need to study is Athens and Rome. And you can throw out all the rest, but you'll still be getting the most out of it. Right? They have done more honor to our species than all the rest. So those two added up are worth more than everything else. Wow. That's a huge statement. And the truth be told, the founders didn't know the entire history of the world. But their judgment was still correct. It's still correct. And the only thing that I would add to this statement today is that now you also have to study the United States, because the United States has existed since 1776. If you want to get as much as you can out of history, that's what you need to study. And after that, yes, there are other things to know, absolutely. And I'm going to highlight, the whole thing this year. You're going to be quite surprised. This year is ancient history, and you, like I said, you probably have some expectations as to what that means, what it is that we are going to cover. I think you will be quite surprised. We're going to cover more than you thought we would. Okay, there's going to be some Chinese history here. There's going to be some Indian history. There's going to be some Islamic history. We're going to cover basically history. And we're going to isolate and we're going to emphasize the ancient part. But we're not going to do that apart from the whole. I'm going to teach you the whole, the entirety of it, in a certain sense. Don't get too scared. I'm not going to ask you about all the dynastic cycles of Chinese history. Don't freak out. We're going to be okay here. There's very little that you need to know about that. But we're going to line it all up and see how it all connects together. And so we'll be able to come at this judgment of John Adams from a new light. And we're going to be able to see that it's still true today, which is amazing. And that makes, we're going to end on this particular point today, that makes these a very specific set of facts. I call these six. These six. No other. I call these six the cardinal anchor facts of history. What do you suppose that means? We're going to end on this note for today. They're anchor facts. So you've already got the notion of anchor facts from our previous lectures, right? Anchor facts are facts that connect past and present. Okay? If these are the cardinal anchor facts, what does that mean? Theo?
The most important.
The most important, right? Like, where do we get the word cardinal from? What's the original use of that term, kind of cardinals in terms of institutions in history? It's from the Catholic Church, right? If you know, we have the St. Louis Cardinals, who are the, and the Arizona Cardinals too, right? The football teams with the Red Birds, right? But the Red Birds are called Cardinals because why? they were called Cardinals for a reason. Does anybody know? Theo?
They were important in the church they were.
Yeah, because they were, because the red birds are all red, just like the officials within the Catholic Church that used to wear all red robes. Right, so hold on a second here. Let me see if I can bring an example of that in case you don't know it. There's a famous painting that we sometimes do in American history, Columbus at Salamanca. So there's Christopher Columbus, and who's he arguing with? Right? He's arguing with a cardinal. The cardinal is wearing his red robes. The cardinals were the most important church officials in Europe, and they are in the Catholic Church to this day. So that's why I get the term cardinal can be used as an adjective, and it's exactly what Theo said, the most important. Okay, so the cardinal anger facts are the most important facts in history, which means, and I'm being very, very precise here, and I want you to ponder the meaning of this here. The most important facts in history. And so, last year, for instance, we studied these facts and we included these facts in American history. Now you notice that they are the very same facts that we're using to study ancient history. How can that be? What does that tell us? If we're able to understand the function of these facts, where does it take us, Keen?
Well, we're not year to year, whether we're studying American history, European history, Asian history, we're still studying, if we're studying with Mr. Powell, we're still studying history, you know, with a capital H. We're just looking at it from a different perspective. We're putting different emphasis on things in history and making connections in slightly different ways.
Okay, right, exactly. History with a capital H. Exactly right. History is one story. And that's an amazing thing. And if you can grasp it as such, then you have a connection between past and present. And it permeates the way that you understand the value of history. Because everything about where we are today came to be that way because of history. And all of history has converged. We live in a globalized civilization. We're all connected in a multitude of ways. So in a sense, we're living in a single civilization now. It has many component parts. The United States is the most important part. But there are other cardinal cultural blocks out there in the world. Europe would be another example of one. China is another one, right? There are these major, major cultural blocks, and then there are smaller ones and sub-blocks and so on. On the order of about 200 countries or so. So the world's a complicated place, but it's all connected now. And that means that all of history converges in the present and connects up in different ways. And that means it's all one. And if you want to understand the world that you live in, there's a powerful tool that can help you do that. And see the connection between all of the different parts and realize how this thing is moving and what direction it's moving. So yeah. These are the anchor facts of history, with a capital H. And they can help you to learn Chinese history properly. They can help you to learn Islamic history properly. They can help you to learn European history properly. They can help you to learn American history properly. And so on. They help you to learn history. Because they are our connection to the past. They are the cardinal anchor facts, which means they're the top six that we've got. There are no more powerful facts than this. History is full of fantastic facts. It's full of amazing facts. It's full of exciting facts. It's full of anchor facts. Okay, but these ones are the cardinal anchor facts. You need to have these in place in order to figure out the rest and how they all relate to each other. And we'll start to build. I keep using this term, and I hope I'm not making a mistake. I hope I'm not stymieing your confusing you when I use it. We're going to build a port-a-land chart of all of history. Right? Like that port-a-land chart of the Mediterranean that we looked at. It's going to be a chart that will allow us to navigate to any point in the past in an integrated manner. In any point in the past, in such a manner that we can always find our way back to where we are now. And always see the connection to everything else all the time. And navigate from one part to another. This will be the first year, actually, in History at Our House that I will demonstrate this technique. I've been working towards it pretty much my entire career. And I'm there now. And this Anchor Fact timeline that we had last year was a really good start to that. And I'm happy that we did it last year, and it was a good step forward, but we're going to go even further this year. We're going to take these anchor facts, and I'm going to show you how to build a port-a-land chart of all of history that allows you as an individual who wants to understand the world to navigate to any part of the past easily, comfortably, and back to where you are now. And think about history as one connected story, which it is. All right, so I'm going to stop there. Tomorrow we're going to work on the formulations that we need, the types of formulations that we need in order to emphasize the connection, right? We've got these facts, and it's really easy to memorize six facts and then write them down on a sheet of paper, right? And take a test and kind of, that's what too many history tests are like, where you just repeat the information and then after the test you forget it. What we're gonna really work on here is the stuff that's not shown, the stuff that's in all that white space, the connections between the facts and us, and really work on that significance, that meaning, so that we can see how it all integrates. And that'll put us in the right position to then go to the ancient past and study it in such a way that we know how it fits. We know whatever story it is we're studying, we know where it is in relation to all the rest. And that helps us to decide, you know, just how much energy to assign to any particular effort. It helps us to not make the mistake of spending too much time on stuff that doesn't matter. And on the other hand, of course, the good part, make sure that we focus on the stuff that matters the most. So, for instance, we spend half of the year studying Greece and Rome. All the stuff before, 2,500 years worth, we cram into about a quarter of the year. And there's a reason for that, because John Adams was right. Greece and Rome are way more important. And you know, we'll have to see what we can do to grasp that. And if we can, then we'll understand why we study some things and not others, and how it all fits together. All right. It was a little bit of a broken up lecture. I apologize for the technical difficulties, but we got pretty much where we need to be here with these cardinal anchor facts. We'll revisit this, make sure everything's clear, and I'll start to show you a different visualization of this information, which is hopefully going to be very useful to you. Okay? Any thoughts, questions? That'll be it for me. All right, guys. Thank you. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye for now.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.